Well, thank you, Mr. Klein. Good to be here. Good to see everyone again. Roads were pretty decent this morning, and hopefully they stay okay so we can all get home safe. I'd like some help here, and if someone could complete this sentence. My very educated mother just served us nine what? Who knows the answer to that? Mr. Jeswold. Pizzas? Well, very close. I learned it as pickles. My very educated mother just served us nine pickles. I learned that in school. We were taught that there were nine planets: Mercury, Venus, Earth, Mars, Jupiter, Saturn, Uranus, Neptune, and Pluto. And we learned this mnemonic to remember these planets' names in order. My very educated mother just served us nine pickles. Anybody learn that in school, or was it just a few? Wow, okay. Well, in 2006, the International Astronomical Union downgraded the status of Pluto to that of a dwarf planet. There's some special definition of a dwarf planet that makes it different from a normal one. So Pluto is out as a planet. And now a mnemonic I see to remember the eight planets' names is, my very educated mother just served us nachos. Well, you know, I'm a big fan of nachos, but it just doesn't sound right to me. But with Pluto no longer being categorized as a planet, it makes the following question a bit easier. Now there's just seven choices instead of eight. So what planet is the friendliest planet to Earth? Well, yeah, that question may be a bit subjective, and given a general fact-driven perspective that I have in the science realm, I don't really like to personify planets. It's like calling a tree friendly or a boulder rude. But I follow where the question leads, and the answer is Jupiter. Well, why Jupiter? Well, because Jupiter is so huge compared to the Earth, it has a really strong gravitational pull. Comets and other galactic ammunition are pulled into Jupiter and absorbed by the planet. Now, many of you may remember it was back in 1992 when the comet Shoemaker-Levy 9 was pulled into Jupiter and was, spectacularly destroyed. Maybe you remember the photographs of the comet segments kind of lining up as it approached Jupiter. I mean, it was a pretty big deal in the science world. With Jupiter having this guardian role, it means that the chance that a large meteor would strike the Earth is reduced. So Jupiter is like our big brother out there, protecting us from the solar system bullies. It is, in a way, therefore, friendly. Well, if you research how humans believe life on Earth will end, I mean, you're going to find many potential candidates. One leading prediction is, a rogue asteroid or comet hitting the Earth. That's where our buddy Jupiter helps out. There's also a life-ending super volcano scenario, a catastrophic disease, the sun dying out, and one of several other potential doomsday events. Now, as Christians, we don't give much weight to these suggested outcomes for the demise of mankind. If all humans on Earth are eradicated, there would therefore be no two witnesses that we read about in Revelation. Well, no two witnesses would mean the Bible is not true. While most of humanity doesn't care much about the contents of the Bible, we sure do. That's one of the reasons why we're here, right? And it's truth we bank on. All right, getting back to Jupiter and its size. The sun has a diameter about 10 times that of Jupiter, so the sun gobbles up many more wandering objects in our solar system. It is, I guess, way more friendlier than Jupiter. And not to be mean and put down the sun or anything, but there are much larger stars in the universe than the sun. And the bigger the star, the better the chance something astounding will happen to it. The consensus in science is that when a star reaches the end of its life, it'll expand into what is called a red giant. Then the next stage of the star is a collapse into a much, much smaller star in diameter, but denser. I mean, significantly denser. And if the star's mass is large enough, with mass and gravity being proportional to one another, it will become a black hole. Now, we all probably know that a black hole is a star or a stellar mass so dense and with so much gravity that light cannot escape it. It has an escape velocity greater than the speed of light. Now, by comparison, the escape velocity of Earth is about 7 miles per second. So a rocket leaving Earth must travel at least this fast to escape the Earth's gravitational pull. But for a black hole, this speed is the speed of light, about 186,000 miles per second. You know, light cannot travel faster than this. So this means that light cannot escape the gravitational pull of a black hole. And so it is literally a black hole in space. I mean, we can't see it because there's no light to identify it. Now, astronomers believe that they have found many of these black holes throughout the universe. And there is a consensus as well that a supermassive black hole resides at the center of most galaxies. And it is presumed that the significant gravitational pull of these really large supermassive black holes is what keeps galaxies together. Now, these black holes are billions of times bigger than the mass of our sun. I mean, to me, creation is truly spectacular, and its scope and size should humble us. Now, we can't see a black hole, yet we believe it to be there. Let's go to John 20 and verse 29, if you'd like to join me there. In the Gospel of John, chapter 20, let's read verse 29. John 20 and verse 29, the Bible reads, Jesus said to him, Thomas, because you have seen me, you have believed. Blessed are those who have not seen and yet have believed. Now, I'm not saying that the science community or people in general who believe black holes exist are blessed. That'd be reading a bit much into the context of what Jesus is saying here. It's our faith in the Father and Son that promote blessings. Now, according to Wikipedia, the phrase "seeing is believing," which we've all heard, is credited to have been established in this form in 1639. The source of this phrase comes from what we just read in John here, where the disciple Thomas he didn't believe Christ was resurrected. Thomas would not believe until, as he put it, he could see the Messiah and put his hands in his wounds. Christ's response to Thomas was an admonishment and an example for us, illustrating the necessary element of faith that is there in our Christian walk. Now, because we can't see a black hole yet believe it to be there, this sort of faith doesn't really help us a whole lot in our salvation, right? I mean, we need to believe in Jesus Christ and follow his lead to the kingdom of God. A black hole in space isn't going to impact us. And I mean that figuratively and literally. I do find it a bit ironic that some of these magnificent aspects of creation, like black holes, are believed and accepted by humans, even though they can't be seen. You can't put a black hole into a laboratory and prove its existence. And yet it is believed as truth and accepted upon faith in science. Yet we believers in our Creator God, who also cannot be seen, are ridiculed for accepting what we cannot see, while scientists and astronomers, they're praised. It's just one of the many ironies out there. All right, back to Jupiter. If Jupiter is friendly because it keeps the meteors away from Earth, a nearby black hole would be Earth's BFF. And if you aren't a texter or a super hip guy like me, that's best friends forever. Black holes have a tremendous gravitational pull. An object that gets close enough to it will soon be absorbed and cease to exist on its own. It'll become part of the black hole. So how close does an object need to get to a black hole to be helplessly pulled in? Well, that'll depend on the size, the mass of the black hole. The larger the mass, the larger the radius would be for its gravitational effect. And perhaps a better word than effect would be devastation. Again, if you are pulled into a black hole, you will no longer exist on your own. Now, the term event horizon is what describes this radius, this threshold of when a black hole's gravitational pull will overtake another object. It's the distance around a black hole that defines that point of no return. I mean, if you ever travel in a spaceship one day and get close to a black hole, stay comfortably on this side of its event horizon. Don't poke the bear would be my advice. Black holes pull objects in. Now, pull is the key word here. Regardless if the object wants to get pulled or not, a black hole will pull and pull. It's quite insensitive to the object's desire. A black hole is completely indiscriminate. It's going to pull and keep pulling. It will not reason, and it will not relent. Let's now compare a black hole with, say, the sun. Well, both are stars, and one could maybe point out a few other similarities. But, you know, it's the many contrasts that are striking. Well, for one, obvious, I mean, we can see the sun. That's exactly the opposite of a black hole, which keeps all light from escaping. And our nearby sun provides life for Earth. You know, a nearby black hole, if too nearby, would take life away. Now, if you place a plant near a window, you may notice that after a few days, it has bent itself towards the light, towards the window. No, plants need sunlight to make energy, so it grows towards the light. The term phototropism describes a plant growing towards light stimulus. And by the way, there will be a science quiz at the end of this message. Phototropism, the plant follows the light. Well, if you've ever seen a field of sunflowers, you're going to see this on a much grander scale. You know, the sunflower heads will start out facing east in the morning, and they'll follow the sun 180 degrees to the west throughout the day. Now, curiously, at night, those sunflower heads move back to face east in anticipation for the next day's sunrise. You know, as black holes have a lot of mystery to them, I'm baffled with sunflowers and how the plants know how to turn back and face east during the night. How do they know how to do that? It's amazing. Now, there are perhaps other contrasting elements between the sun and a black hole, but the big distinction is that the sun emits light and a black hole is going to pull light in. While the sun freely and indiscriminately gives light, the black hole will similarly take it. You know, the sun burns and shines its light by expending itself. You know, through nuclear fusion, hydrogen is converted to helium in the sun's core. This produces energy, which heats up the other materials, which make their way to the surface and radiate out as heat and light. You know, since we are sort of personifying celestial objects in this message, let's just say the sun is pretty unselfish. It uses up its own resources to emit the heat and light that we all need to survive. Esther 4. Let's read verses 15 through 16. If you'd like to join me in the book of Esther, chapter 4. Let's read verses 15 through 16. Esther chapter 4. And starting in verse 15, the Bible reads, "Then Esther told them to reply to Mordecai, 'Go, gather all the Jews who are present in Shushan and fast for me, neither eat nor drink for 3 days, night or day. My maids and I will fast likewise. And so I will go to the king, which is against the law. And if I perish, I perish.'" This is a biblical example of someone shining a light. Someone giving up resources, potentially her life, for others to survive. So Esther approached the king to petition him to undo the persecution that was set in place by Haman. But the law was that no one should approach the king. So, I mean, she expected to die. I mean, she hoped she wouldn't, but had the expectation that she would. And she, of course, did not die. But while being pardoned for approaching the king in the first place, later she even offered her life to save her fellow Jews. And you can read about that in Esther chapter 7 and verse 3. Now the name Esther means star in Hebrew. You know, how fitting. It was when she decided to sacrifice herself, or was willing to do this, willing to do what was right, willing to save others, that her life became a light, like a star. She gave to others, just like the sun, our closest star, gives light to all of us. Let's go to 1 John 3:16. 1 John chapter 3 and verse 16, if you'd like to join me there. First John chapter 3 and verse 16, the Bible reads, "By this we know love, because he, Jesus, laid down his life for us, and we also ought to lay down our lives for the brethren." You know, this idea of shining a light, giving up ourselves, sacrificing for others, it's affirmed here in 1 John 3:16. Esther had much love for others, just as Christ had much love for all of us. And I've always really liked how 1 John 3:16 is such a fitting complement to John 3:16. What if Esther had been more like a black hole? Black holes don't give off any light, right? They take light in, they pull it in. Well, she probably would have lived comfortably in the palace while her people were slaughtered. Esther teaches us that if we live to keep our life, I mean, we may survive, and maybe even survive in worldly comfort. We will also be dwelling in darkness. But if we live to give ourselves, we'll shine. Esther lived 1 John 3:16. Now, a familiar verse to all of us is 1 John 5:19, which states that the whole world lies under the sway of the wicked one. Well, instead of the word sway, many translations use power, use control, or rule. And equally synonymous to these words is the word pull. The whole world lies under the pull of Satan. Satan does not lead. Satan pulls. And like a black hole, Satan is unconcerned and indiscriminate. He doesn't care about anyone or anything. He does not have your best interest in mind. The choices that we make to follow God's ways are absolutely ignored by him. He will pull and he will pull. And his ways are unrelenting, just like the gravitational pull of a black hole. Jesus leads, Satan pulls. And the difference here is choice. It's our choice to follow God's ways. It's Satan's choice to pull us away from God. I mean, Satan is the epitome of selfishness. He doesn't care about our choices. He wants what he wants. He is indiscriminate and unrelenting. Satan is a black hole. An article from Science and Technology presumes that there are a few ways that a black hole can kill a person. Now, one is spaghettification, which is exactly what it sounds, where the gravitational pull is so strong that you'll be stretched out like a piece of spaghetti. Ouch. Another fatal encounter would be meeting up with the accretion disk, which is the superheated matter being sucked into the black hole with you. I mean, you'll be incinerated. There's also the fate of being zapped by the powerful plasma jets that spew out from the polar ends of a black hole. You know, these all sound like pretty awful ways to go. These various visuals of being killed physically by a black hole, they're important because we can be similarly spiritually annihilated if we let Satan pull us into his black hole. I mean, let those visuals sink in as we consider the wages of sin is death. However, the means, the end is the same. You know, you're no more. The black hole doesn't care. Neither does Satan. However he can pull you in and destroy you, that's fine with him. It's why there are so many forms of temptation out there. You know, if one method isn't working on you, be assured that there will be another method pulling at you. And these methods will be unrelenting. Remember, opportunity knocks once, but temptation constantly bangs on the front door. The Bible uses sheep and goats to illustrate the difference between the righteous and the wicked, right? Christ, our shepherd, leads. And we as sheep follow. I mean, sheep naturally want to follow. But goats are different. I read that you can actually train a goat to follow your lead. But in most cases, you'll need to have a leash on the goat. And it takes time. And it doesn't always work. Inevitably, you'll likely have to pull the goat where you want it to go. Sheep choose to follow a shepherd. Goats are pulled. Science cannot see or observe a black hole directly. That's because they don't emit any light, so there's nothing that you can see. But science can determine if a black hole exists by the effect it has on the surrounding area. That accretion disk that I spoke of, that matter that's superheated up due to its gravitational friction, we can see that, and that's one way to identify that a black hole exists in the area. Another method is by observing stars near a black hole whose orbit is affected by the gravity of the black hole. You know, if the star isn't moving as it should, it's likely a black hole is responsible for its irregular or odd orbit or motion. So how are you able to determine a believer from a non-believer? I mean, we can't see the heart of other people, so we don't really know for sure. And I, for one, would not want to condemn or reward anyone else for their Christian effectiveness when it comes to their faith or belief, their heart. That's beyond my pay grade. But God does tell us that by our fruits we will be known. That's Matthew 7:16. So what others can see in us, in our walk on God's path, is our fruits. What we believe and our heart-to-heart relationship with Jesus Christ, that's one thing. But that can't be seen. The results of this, what can be seen, is the fruits of this relationship. You know, think about the fruits of Esther. Visible and evident. Isaiah had the same dilemma in the Old Testament. How do you qualify a believer, a follower of God's ways? You know, Isaiah had to deal with the paths of men, such as, wizards and mediums. I mean, just like we all have to avoid being pulled onto this path, pulled towards this black hole. He summed up his response this way. Let's go to Isaiah 8 and verse 20. How do you qualify a believer? How do you know a believer? Isaiah chapter 8 and verse 20. Isaiah chapter 8 and verse 20, the Bible reads, "To the law and to the testimony, if they do not speak according to this word, it is because there is no light in them." Well, this is Isaiah's version of you will know them by their fruits. If actions and words are consistent with biblical teaching, we'll know the sheep from the goats. We'll know who's led by God's ways or who is being pulled by Satan. And Isaiah even tops this off with the prominent characteristic of a black hole, right? Quote, "because there is no light in them." Now, we've covered a couple of topics relating black holes to Satan. You know, Satan is dark, Satan has no light, and he pulls where God leads. Now, these are polar opposites on any scale. God has provided us with creation to see these literal contrasts so that we can better understand the path he leads us on, versus the path that we are all being relentlessly pulled towards. As I start to close out this message, I want to return back to a defining feature of a black hole, the event horizon. Again, this is the boundary around a black hole where matter has reached that point of no return. You know, crossing this boundary results in extinction. The object will be absorbed into the black hole and it'll never be seen again. I titled this message Event Horizon. Now, the physics surrounding this event horizon of a black hole, it's pretty hard for me to understand. And I don't know that there's an absolute consensus in science either as to what exactly happens. I've read that time will slow down and the laws of physics as we know them break down. That's hard to understand for me. And it is suggested that time travel may be possible. Since cause no longer necessarily precedes effect, and the past no longer necessarily determines the future. I don't really get that. There are terms like frame dragging and infinitely thin singularity rings. Someone please explain all this to me. What I see is that there's a threshold that you don't want to get close to if you value your life. And literally, yeah, my suggestion would be if you're traveling in a spaceship, give the event horizon of a black hole a wide berth. And we can do this by making choices in spaceship navigation, right? But also in our lives here and now. I don't know about you, but I like positive examples. Instructions and laws, yes, they are important. But I get inspired by people who make good choices. And that's the power we have, making choices. A black hole's pull gives us no choice if we get close enough. But we can make good choices, just like Ruth. Let's read about Ruth. Let's go to Ruth chapter 1, and let's read verse 16. I'm sure we've all read this before, but this is a fitting example here in this message. Ruth chapter 1 and verse 16. Ruth chapter 1 and verse 16, the Bible reads, "But Ruth said, entreat me not to leave you or to turn back from following after you. For wherever you go, I will go. And wherever you lodge, I will lodge. Your people shall be my people, and your God, my God." You know, certainly Ruth felt a strong bond with her mother-in-law, Naomi, and that's obviously commendable. God has placed a high value on family throughout the Bible. But Ruth here was also choosing God. Naomi's other daughter-in-law, Orpah, went back to Moab, and we're told she returned, quote, "to her people and to her gods." Ruth's choice was to choose the God of Abraham, the God of Isaac, the God of Jacob. Ruth's choice was to choose God, the Father of Jesus Christ. I mean, that's a pretty wise choice for us all. That's a choice of light versus dark. That's a choice of being led versus being pulled. Obviously, we want to stay away from Satan's event horizon. And we can do this by reading our Bibles. And in particular, we read, let's go to 1 Thessalonians chapter 5. Let's read verses 16 through 18. 1 Thessalonians chapter 5. Let's read verses 16 through 18 if you'd like to join me there. First Thessalonians chapter 5, starting in verse 16. We have instruction here in the Bible. "Rejoice always, pray without ceasing, give thanks in all circumstances, for this is the will of God in Christ Jesus for you." And we can help ourselves on our journey if we emulate the biblical examples we have, including Christ himself. The Bible tells us of people who expended themselves for the benefits of others. I mean, we touched a bit on Esther and Ruth here. And no more is that better revealed to us than in the Gospels, where we learn of our Messiah and his sacrifice. Esther was a light. Ruth was a light. Christ was a light. You know, these people were unselfish and gave of themselves for others. A black hole pulls and takes and gives up nothing. If you are pulled into a black hole, you're not going to exist on your own. You become part of that black hole. The sun and the examples of godliness in the Bible give and shine. And following the examples and teachings the Bible gives us, we can all stay clear of that event horizon of evil. You know, it's very difficult to clear a forest. But at an earlier stage, the trees were all simply seeds. I mean, it's pretty easy to toss away a bag of seeds. It's so much more difficult to clear a forest. The point here is to deal with our tendencies and temptations promptly and urgently. I mean, we all have things that pull us towards the event horizon of Satan. Don't let them take root. It takes a lot of time and effort to clear a forest after the trees are mature. Toss those seeds away now, or the task will become much harder later. And you know what? Most of us will have to continually toss those seeds away daily. Let's close here in Daniel. Let's go to Daniel chapter 12. Let's read verses 1 through 3. Daniel chapter 12. And we'll read verses 1 through 3 if you'd like to join me there. Daniel chapter 12, and starting in verse 1, the Bible reads, "At that time Michael shall stand up, the great prince who stands watch over the sons of your people. And there shall be a time of trouble, such as never was seen, since there was a nation, even to that time. And at that time your people shall be delivered, every one who is found written in the book. And many of those who sleep in the dust of the earth shall awake, some to everlasting life, some to shame and everlasting contempt. Those who are wise shall shine like the brightness of the firmament, and those who turn many to righteousness like the stars forever and ever." You know, we can be pulled towards the event horizon, or we can choose to follow Christ's lead. We no longer have the ability to choose if we are pulled within Satan's event horizon. Choose to follow the path that the Bible sets out for us. You know, it was noted earlier that the sun can be looked at as being, unselfish, because it expends itself to give off heat and light. You know, people who give without taking, lead without pulling, similarly have other people's best interests in mind. I like how Daniel points out, quote, "Those who turn many to righteousness will shine like the stars forever and ever." So let's help each other towards this awesome destination of the kingdom of God. And Daniel here also affirms that those who are wise, those who make the choice to be led, those who make the choice to follow, those who are not pulled towards the event horizon of evil, these people shall shine. Let us shine.